Thank you for tuning in to the fifth day of IGH 260, a five-year-long study of the New Testament brought to you by International Gospel Hour. Today's broadcast, Week 1, Lesson 5. A quick reminder, here's what IGH 260 is all about. We will be studying each of the 260 chapters in the New Testament for 1 week. That, of course, equals 260 consecutive weeks, or 5 years' worth of study. To learn more about IGH 260 and how you can get all of our materials absolutely free, including program downloads, digital books, online and correspondence courses, and more, we encourage you to do one of the following. Text the word IGH FREE to 55222. That's IGHFREE, all one word. Simply text IGH FREE to 55222. You can also send an email to free at ighradio.com, or you can call us toll-free at 1-855-IGH-6988. To listen to our earlier broadcast and thus keep up with our IGH 260 studies, go to the media page at internationalgospelhour.com. It's the beginning of a new year. If you need a simple daily Bible reading schedule, go to the free page at internationalgospelhour.com in order to download one today. Here's where we were at the end of our last broadcast. To get the fuller context, listen to our prior programs by going to internationalgospelhour.com and clicking the media tab. We have already, at the beginning of our study of Matthew chapter 1, spent a great deal of time elaborating David's role in Christ's ancestry. Matthew 1, verse 1, introduces David's place broadly as one of the three key figures in Matthew's genealogy. As we move through the genealogy, the significance we attributed to him earlier does not call for further elaboration. He was introduced in line as the son of Jesse, the grandson of Obed, and the great-grandson of Boaz. And just as quickly, once introduced, Matthew's register moves past David. One passing yet still notable remark, how David appears in the seed line. Jesse begot David the king. And then, immediately afterward, David the king begot Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. Though the words David the king appear twice in a row in the same verse, in some translations anyway, the emphasis was this. David was David the king. That's not accidental. Whether or not the king was used twice to apply to David, the significant factor was this. David was called the king. Abraham was not introduced nor described as the father of the Hebrews. Though certainly true, it was not mentioned because that identification would not, could not apply to Jesus. Jesus did not become the father of the Hebrew nation, but Jesus did become king, like David was king. David's description as king introduces a new dimension to the seed line of Jesus. From this point, David's place in the ancestral line, and going forward, it was not just a genealogy connecting Abraham to David to Christ. It was a genealogy of kings from David to Christ. The genealogy of Christ, as does every genealogy, obviously, narrows with each passing generation. But now it narrows in a different way and for a different purpose. The Jews anticipated the arrival of Messiah, to be a king like David. Jesus definitely fulfilled that. He would be Messiah, and he would be like David, but not exactly like David. Jesus would fulfill the more spiritually inclined aspects of David's reign, of David's generosity, of David's tabernacle, and of David's heart, but not the physical aspects. Matthew's gospel as a whole was written to establish, to prove, that Jesus was the Messiah. As part of being the Messiah, Jesus was also, in other settings, proven to be the prophet, John 1:21, the one who reversed the curse of Adam's sin, Romans 5:17, the one mediator between God and man, 1 Timothy chapter 2, and, no doubt, a host of other equally singular distinctives. But here, Matthew's inspired record centers on this one key distinctive. Christ was singularly qualified to sit on David the king's throne. Luke does it as well in Luke 1, verses 30 and following. But Matthew's David the king, Jesus the king connection has a distinctive fit that we do not find in Luke. It's an over-the-top, full-throttle embracing of First Testament text and realizations, what Matthew designates as fulfillments. Matthew would continue to detail the birth of the Messiah in the rest of Matthew chapter 1 and into Matthew chapter 2. Matthew would chronicle the announcements and explanations of the coming messianic kingdom in the following chapters, Matthew 3 through 7. He would provide multiple proofs of Christ's messiahship in Matthew 8 through 10. Matthew would introduce, discuss, and exemplify the type of kingdom that God, through the Messiah, would build in Matthew chapters 11 through 13. He would clearly demonstrate Jesus' authority as Messiah in Matthew 14 through 18. He would present the blessings and the judgments that would come in the Messiah's reign in Matthew 19 and 20. He would describe the formal presentation and the eventual rejection of the Christ in Matthew chapters 21 through 23. And in the end, Matthew would chronicle the death, the burial, the resurrection, the kingdom commission, and the ascension of Christ in the closing chapters of his gospel, Matthew 26 through 28. Yes, the words David the king were messianic in their import, and they anticipate all of the above and more. It would be too much to explore that thought in detail as revealed and developed in the First Testament, but perhaps this will whet your appetite for further study. Ezekiel ties the coming Messiah, the Christ, to David in several passages. This coming Messiah would be one shepherd. He shall feed them, and he will be my servant David. Ezekiel chapter 34, verse 23. The following verse indicates that my servant David would be a prince among them. Ezekiel 34, verse 24. Three chapters later, Christ is further identified as David, this time as king, as well as servant and prince. Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 24 and 25. David, the shepherd, prince, king, and servant, anticipated antitypical roles by the Christ. Christ's version of each was consummately perfect, but David's typical roles teach a very key principle. Consider those texts that we just alluded to in more detail. Ezekiel 34, verses 22 through 24. Therefore, I will save my flock, and they shall no longer be a prey, and I will judge between sheep and sheep. I will establish one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them, my servant David. He shall feed them and be their shepherd, and I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David a prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. And then consider this, Ezekiel 37, verses 24 through 28. David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they shall all have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. Then they shall dwell in the land that I have given to Jacob my servant, where your fathers dwelt, and they shall dwell there, they, their children, and their children's children forever, and my servant David shall be their prince forever. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them, and it shall be an everlasting covenant with them. I will establish them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary in their midst forevermore. My tabernacle also shall be with them. Indeed, I will be their God, and they shall be my people. The nations also will know that I, the Lord, sanctify Israel when my sanctuary is in their midst forevermore." What's significant here? Ezekiel writing during the time of the Babylonian exile, hundreds of years, nearly half a millennium removed from David, spoke about a future time when David would play a new role in God's kingdom, not the literal man called David the king that we see mentioned in Matthew 1, but the man that David prefigured, better, the Messiah that David prefigured. That future David prefigured Messiah would be a shepherd. He would build a better tabernacle. He would be a servant king. He would be a prince among men and a prince above men. He would secure the land for God's people in a new way, and he would lead his people to see God like they had never seen God before. Unlike David, he would reign with God. Unlike David, he would become king after his death. Unlike David, his kingdom would be everlasting. In a way that David could never be, this new David would be Emmanuel, God with us, a message that Matthew delivers near the end of chapter 1. Moving forward, once David the king was introduced, Matthew's work moves quickly through a succession of kings. David fathered Solomon, who in turn fathered Rehoboam, who fathered Abijah, and so forth. This David the king seed line continued through Asa, Jehoshaphat, Joram, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, Manasseh, Amon, Josiah, and then ended with Josiah's son, Jeconiah. Indirect mention was also made of Josiah's other sons, that is, Jeconiah's brothers, some of whom also served as king. At this time, however, Judah's kings were not always autonomously ruling the nation, but were often the vassals of the Babylonian kings. They were, for lack of a better description, puppet kings. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study. A reminder as we close, to learn more about IGH 260 and how you can get all of our materials absolutely free, just use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com or reach out to us at facebook.com/International Gospel Hour. We hope that you can join us in our next broadcast.